Welcome to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast,
your source for coyote hunting, fishing, and more.
We're calling West Texas, and we're filming, and we called 36 coyotes in one night.
3 years ago, I had in one morning 6 bucks that were 3.5 and older within 50 yards of my stand. 6 different bucks, one morning.
It was in October, went made my first coyote stand, me and my cousin. And very first freaking stand, guys, we caught up 7 coyotes. 7 coyotes.
Florida itself is a fisherman's paradise. We stick out in the middle of the water, man. There's water everywhere.
Let's kick it into overdrive.
This podcast brought to you by Predator Hunter Outdoors. Locally owned and operated out of Attica, Michigan, Predator Hunter Outdoors will keep you hunting when the sun goes down. Predator Hunter Outdoors has something for every budget and experience level, including lights, night vision, and thermal, as well as a full line of tripods, mounts, and predator calls. Look them up on Facebook and Instagram at Predator Hunter Outdoors, or visit their webpage at www.predatorhunteroutdoors.com. Enter the promo code LIGHT for 20% off light products, and TRIPOD for 10% off tripods and mounts. With today's technology, hunters in the field have more tools than ever to maximize their outdoor experiences. One of those tools is a Grand Rapids, Michigan-based HuntWise app. The HuntWise Pro app is loaded with features including property lines, landowner data, windcast, huntcast, over 250 map layers including 3D maps, a localized rut indicator, as well as discounts of 20% off various name brand products. Step up to the Elite membership and you will get all of that plus HuntCast 2.0 with customizable alerts, Whitetail 365, which gives you season dates and local rut times, as well as the best time to plant your food plots, a 15-day hunt forecast, and 40 to 50% discount on name brand products. Enter code OVERDRIVE for 20% off your membership to HuntWise.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast. It's me, Josh, this week, and co-host, Mr. Kevin Rott. And this week, we have extra special guest. I have to be very nice right now. My wife, Alicia.
Hello, everybody.
What's going on, Kevin?
How you doing?
Doing all right. Had a family reunion all weekend. Yesterday, I spent a lot of time around the smoker. And then we went there, and man, I brought like over 50 pounds of chicken, and I think we brought 9 wings home.
Yeah.
That was all that was left from that chicken yesterday.
Did you, what kind of prep did you do to the chicken?
So I brined it. I had like 25 pounds of wings, 25 pounds of drumsticks. I brined it for 24 hours in water, soy sauce, a little bit of olive oil, onions, garlic, pepper. Trying to think, there's not much more in there. Maybe a little bit of smoked paprika, a little bit of brown sugar, and some salt. I bring that to a boil, then I let it all cool down. I let it cool off overnight, and then I put ice in it, and then dumped all the chicken in there, left that in the cooler overnight again, and then I smoked it at about 225 to 240 because it was slowly rising. I did that for 3 hours, and then I dumped it in the broiler for about 5 to 10 minutes just to crisp up that skin. And the whole time it was in there, I kept brushing it with more, more and more butter, and just letting that crisp up on there. But, dude, it went by so fast. Like, I bet I ate like 14 chickens yesterday. It was good, though. I did 2 different flavors. I did Meat Church Holy Voodoo, which is kind of like, I don't know, it's almost like a Cajun kind of, but it's not hot. And then I did one that's actually an Amish venison seasoning, but it's more of like a brown sugar, like more sweeter than salty. And yeah, I don't know which one was even left, but there was only enough left for the kids and her to eat lunch today.
Nice.
Off of that 50 some odd pounds.
Must have been good.
It was pretty darn good. Now, you went coyote hunting Friday night. Tell us about that night.
Was that Friday night?
Saturday night. Goodness gracious, it's Monday today. It's Labor Day today. I'm all messed up. I'm getting old around here. My memory sucks.
All you young Friday, kids talking about getting old.
Friday you went out, but you didn't have any luck, right?
Yeah, which has been par for the course for the past couple of weeks. It's just been slow. I haven't even been getting many vocals. I haven't seen squat. That being said, I have been doing a lot of daytime hunting.
Mm-hmm.
I got one spot that is frustrating. That spot we talked about in Muskegon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been out there 3 times now. Haven't seen or heard a thing. And then when I'm gone, oh, they just came up and messed with his chickens. You know, they just didn't want. And then come to find out, someone else decided to go out there and hunt a little bit too.
Oh.
Ended up shooting one of them, but only grazed it. Took a shot at another one, missed that one. Then the landowners across the street seen it laying by their pond. They took a shot at it. Doesn't know if he hit it or not, but it walked away slowly. So I went out there. That was actually a first place I went Saturday night. And I went both across the road and at her place. Didn't see squat. Huh?
This is the spot that I connected you with a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So she did end up letting somebody else in there too.
Her nephew got out there.
Okay.
And I found that out by going out there, sitting down. I looked back in the woods. This is a real thick area other than a horse pasture. Everything else is definitely like shotgun. But I was sitting back by a pond at the end of the horse pasture and looked back into the brush, and I could see something, and he had put a pop-up blind back in there. And after I seen that, I asked her about someone else being out there. Well, my nephew said he was going to go get a call with one of those floppy things on it, and he was going to try it. And I said, well, if that's what you're going to do, then I don't want to come out there. I don't want to do the multiple people on the property thing. And I explained to her why, because of safety and overcalling and everything else.
Yep.
I said, if that's what you want to do, that's fine, but I'm not going to come out anymore.
How long of a drive is it from you?
Only like 15 minutes.
Okay.
And then she said, well, I'll just have him take his stuff off and tell him that you don't want him out here. I don't really want to be a jerk about it, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's up to you what you want to do, but this is my recommendation. So she had him take his stuff out of there. He went across the road and like a property south, and that's where he shot the one.
Okay.
So anyway, I went out there Saturday night, didn't see anything at either location. I did hear him howling, but it sounded to me like they were probably about a mile away or better. So I hunted those two spots and then made about a 45-minute drive to another property where the landowner had sent me a trail cam picture of having one on the property. I think you've been out to that spot with me before. And so I went out there. Of course, once I got within about 20 minutes, it was raining pretty steady.
Oh, yeah.
So I got there, parked in the driveway by the barn, looked at my radar. Looked like the rain was moving out. So I just sat there and waited for the rain to quit. Finally, it quit about the time I was thinking about going home. And the way that property is laid out, they have she has cows. And then there's a hay field. Then there's a tree line, which is just like, you know, one tree width. It's not very big.
Yep.
And then it goes back into a second field, which isn't really any crops or anything. That goes into pines and woods and all that. So I went out to the first field. There's a couple of deer out there, played some low volume distress, medium volume distress for a while. Didn't see anything. So then I decided to go back to that back field. Got back there.
You called the front field and then moved back. Okay.
Correct. Then went to the back field, set up out there. I ran Tony Tebbe's single coyote howl.
Yep.
Followed that up with PT Mom and Pup Serenade.
Okay.
And I bet you it wasn't 2 minutes that coyote came out of the woods.
Never vocalized.
Okay. Came out across. The wind was in my face, basically. Well, kind of quartering. And that coyote came out of the woods and went right across the field on the upwind side of the collar. I barked. Growled at him once. He stopped. I didn't get quite steadied for the shot. He started moving again. Growled at her. It was a female. Growled at her, and she stopped, and I dropped her. It was like a 160-yard shot. Then called for about 20 minutes after that, and nothing else showed up. So that was it. went home after that.
Was that an adult?
Yes.
Okay. It didn't look really that big in the pictures.
Yeah, I'd say probably about 27, 28 pounds.
Okay. So what made you, because typically that's not one that we would do, call a front field and then walk back and call a little deeper. What made you decide to do that?
Because she said she's found scat and tracks right behind the cow pen.
Okay.
And I've called from that first field before and had them vocalize in the backfield, then moved to the backfield and shot them.
Yep.
But I've never called one in on that front field. But with there being tracks and scat there, not only that, but maybe 2 months ago I was out there and they actually howled from across the road. So there is a possibility it could be coming from across the road, cut between the two properties and then come out. Yep. That's why I wanted to do the front field first in case they were either hanging around in there or maybe they were over across the road. I think that's only the second time I've ever called that front field.
Okay.
In the past year or two. I mean, I've been hunting this property for probably, 3 or 4 years at least.
Okay. Yeah, it's just not one that we typically do is call and then move. But how far of a distance do you think that is from where you first set up to the back?
To the tree line or to the back?
To the backfield where you ended up shooting it.
Well, my shot was 160 yards, and that was pretty much across the field.
Okay.
So I set up against that tree line, and it's probably that same distance from where I was when I first started calling in the front field.
So a matter of 300 yards.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's not that big of a difference, but I guess sometimes it just takes moving in just a little bit closer. And
you know, that's one of those things that always sticks in my mind is, did they just decide to come to that sound, or were they coming to the first sound and I just happened to get closer and that keyed them to come right in there? You know, that's one of those things that always sticks in my mind, that and how many coyotes come hang around after you leave a set.
Yeah.
You know,
probably a lot. You'd right. have to have a lot of cameras out to see where all of a sudden you're on for 10 minutes and all of a sudden the coyotes are showing up on camera. But right. it would be interesting because I think I read once before that they can, like, the area is active for like an hour or two after you leave because of the sounds that have been going through there.
Really?
I don't know if that's true or not, but, like, you know, you could expect one to show up still investigating that sound for a certain amount of time, even after there's been no sound played.
Well, you and I both know we've ran sets and killed it over an hour.
Oh, yeah.
And if you do a half hour set, don't see anything, turn around, leave, it is definitely a possibility.
Right, exactly. You never know how many are going to run through that section in a nighttime either.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, that's good. At least you're getting out hunting. I've been pretty much on, I don't know, husbandly lockdown or something for a while here. That's what I'm going to say, at least.
Domestic duties.
Yeah, domestic duties. So there's no domestic abuse. So I don't know. Got to do what she wants me to do or something like that. But I wanted to bring Alicia on today because it's not one that I've really heard. There may be some out there, but you don't really hear a lot of, like in my case, Alicia does not hunt. She hasn't hunted. She's gone with me hunting, but she does not purchase her own licenses, go out and fill the tag that, or try to fill them. We don't really ever hear the thoughts from the wife who is always left home. Instead of being part of the adventure, she's always left home to babysit, take care of the house, deal with the kids, all that stuff. So first thing I've got for you is how you came up, because you weren't ever like raised anti-hunting or like hunting was hidden from you in any way, but it wasn't really as serious as it is now.
Right. Yeah. So growing up, my dad hunted, but it wasn't like if he missed hunting, he wasn't sad about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think in the time growing up, he got a couple deer that I can remember, but he was never really that great at like cooking deer. So he never really kept anything. He gave it away. So yeah. So hunting was like in the family, but it wasn't like a main priority for anybody.
And that was all coming up.
Yeah. That was, yeah. Growing up, my dad more focused on working instead of hunting, but if he got to go hunting, he did. So
did your mom ever try and cook venison or any game meat?
No, not that I remember.
Okay. Well, was it because they didn't like it, or was it just because it just never was something they did?
I just think it was something they never did.
Okay.
Well, and your parents separated at a certain point.
Right. Yeah. My parents divorced when I was young. So it was a split. I was in a split home for almost the entire time that I can remember. So yeah, back and forth between mom and dad's.
And what about fishing?
No fishing. There was barely any fishing. Yeah, first time I remember fishing is with my stepdad, Darren. He was a fisherman, but yeah, not we never really ate it either. So
yeah, that's what we were talking about that the other day, about how much he loved to fish, but everybody said they can't remember him ever bringing fish home back to the table to eat it. He just loved to fish.
He didn't like he didn't like to eat fish. He just liked to fish.
Well, that's like you too.
Right. Yeah.
And everyone that does like higher end bass fishing and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you're a sinner if you take them fish home.
I think they're tasty.
Right. So what about the food then? Because you said he didn't really know how to cook it, but what was your experience to a certain point with wild game? I mean, there was a reason, because when I met you, you weren't a fan.
Yeah, I did not like the taste of venison at all, like at all. No matter how it was cooked, I didn't like the taste of it. And I don't know if it's just because of how my parents cooked it, or if it was, you know, just that I was picky at that point in time. I don't know.
Still,
you know, growing up, one thing about my parents, and I think this is old school, was they tended, in my opinion, to overcook a lot of it.
Yes.
So like they always cooked venison to like well done. Yes. Or medium well. Vegetables were always
from that.
Yes.
Vegetables were always cooked until they were like soft and sloppy.
Yes.
So is that how they prepared it and why you didn't like it?
Yes.
Because
yes.
Once I started cooking venison steak like medium rare, I loved it.
Right. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It was always well done. And it was usually just like salt and pepper, you know, not much of any other kind of like no marinade or anything like that. So yeah, absolutely. Overcooked and just, yeah, tough to chew. And yeah.
See, and I think we've been together, well, today makes officially 16 years that we've been together, and we have eaten a ton of deer.
Yes.
And out of all those, I can only ever remember one deer that neither of us really enjoyed eating.
Right.
And that was a doe I shot a couple years ago, but she was an old, old doe. And dude, Kevin, just the gamiest venison I have ever tasted, no matter how we cooked it.
Yeah.
What type of terrain was it taken off of?
River swamp. Bottom.
Oh, yeah, swamp deer.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I thought too, but I think we ended up taking almost everything we could from her and grinding it up and making jerky out of it.
Yeah.
But like, is that the flavor that you remember always growing up, or was that even worse?
Yeah, no, it was definitely a very gamey taste for sure. And I definitely think it took you cooking the meat less done, you know, more rare to enjoy it as well. You know, when you're so used to it always being cooked a certain way, you don't want to try it a different way.
Yeah.
So it did definitely take me some time to enjoy meat less done.
Speaking of which, have you guys ever tried any methods to remove that gaminess from venison? There's two methods I've used. I've brined it before.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is soaking it in milk.
Oh.
Soak it in milk until the milk is bloody. Then you dump it out and then put more in. And you do that until the milk stays pretty much white.
Hmm.
Then you prep it like you normally would and cook it. And that seems to really remove a lot of that gaminess.
The only way we really do it is just marinating everything.
Yeah.
I mean, almost everything we make is in some kind of a seasoning or marinade for at least a few hours beforehand.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what, if you take a piece of raw venison, you can taste, you can smell that like gaminess on that meat. And I try to marinate it to the point where you don't smell that when you put your nose by the meat. And I mean, I don't know. Was there any concerns that you had with wild game that made you less, you know, because you still weren't like a big fan of it until it pretty much came down to, if we're going to be married, you're going to learn to eat this. I mean, there's no other way to put that. That was one of the deals we had originally made, like, I'm going to hunt and keep the meat, and that is going to feed the family. I don't think she ever had liked venison at all when I met her.
Right.
Was that in your vows, Alicia?
No, it wasn't.
Should have been null and void anyway.
No, I'm adding that to her contract. Yeah, the contract constantly. But I mean, was there anything that you just said, you know, like, I don't want to eat it because I heard this, or because this could happen, or anything like that? Or was it just always that the flavor, you did not enjoy it?
I just think it wasn't something that we had, or that my entire family really made. So it was just kind of one of those foods that you just don't, like, we just went to the grocery store and got what was there, you know, like, they didn't fish, they didn't deer hunt, they didn't turkey hunt, they didn't, you know, none of that. So none of that stuff was very common for me to know, like, to go, oh, I could enjoy a wild turkey or, you know, whatever, because nobody ever really did it. The only thing we ever did.
If you want to try some wild turkey, you'll have to get it with me or somebody else.
Yeah,
not me, unless it happens to run out in front of the truck.
So I think it was just not having that food available to us. You know, you grow up with what's in the grocery store. So
how tough was the transition, though?
It definitely took me several years to really enjoy eating animals that weren't from the grocery store.
Which is, well,
how much of that, Alicia, would you say is getting used to it, or how much of it was Josh's cooking improving?
I think both. I think getting used to knowing that's what we have to eat. Like,
I just ate Bambi.
Yeah, you know, honestly, getting, you know, that's knowing that's what I have, that's what we have in our freezer, and that's what we're going to eat. And then definitely the preparation and cooking it, like, it definitely made a difference.
Yep.
With how it was cooked. And now, honestly, I don't really taste the gamey taste anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just that's pretty much all we eat. So it's just what I'm used to. And our kids too, like, I don't think they would know the difference either, because that's what they grew up on. So
there was a funny story about that. You know, that mental thing about what you're eating.
Yes.
There was a guy at work, and I had cooked up a bunch of venison steaks, and I had brined it, and I was so excited about how you couldn't even tell it was venison, really,
yeah,
in terms of the flavor, that I took a bunch of it to work, and I was giving it to people at work. And one of the guys in my department, he says, man, I wouldn't have known that was venison. I said, well, take some home and let your wife try it, you know. And he's like, oh man, she won't eat deer meat, so don't tell her what it is. He's like, all right, I'm gonna do that. So next day, he says he took it home that night, warmed it up. She was eating it. She was loving it. And he looks at her and says, you're eating deer. And he said she about threw up and she got ticked at him, but she was loving it until the mental part of it was, you know.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, like, you know, when you go to the grocery store, you don't see the cow, you don't see the pig, you don't see, you know, you don't see the animal. Whereas in the woods, you know, I see Josh bring home the deer and skin the deer, and we process it together, you know, so you see it broken down, whereas you don't know that when you go to a grocery store. So it is a lot of mental.
I laughed because Kevin, I think it was you, must have been replying to that lady. We were just getting chewed out again on my deer hunt from last year about how we should just go to the store and buy the animals that are already there for us instead of going out and killing them.
Right.
Like, where does that, there's no common sense in that argument.
I looked at her profile page, and she didn't have much on there, but in her conversations with other people, I think she's British. Well, I think she's from the UK. And over there, they don't hunt.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Much. But that's the thing. You can't just come at us and attack us because you think it's a waste, when we know what is in our freezer. You don't know what the hell's in your freezer when you go buy it.
Well, they can come and attack us all they want. That's what they do. We know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's fun most of the time. I just try to stay quiet because you handle it so much better now.
Right. Well, with that one in particular, I'm at the stage where I'm done being nice. So if she comes back with some more, it might get a little bit more snarky. Put it that way.
We deal with these people all the time, though. And that's not the first time we've seen that. We're just go to the store. Now, put yourself where you are now compared to 16 years ago before you met me.
Mm-hmm.
why would you feel better about going to the store and trusting what is there rather than what I could bring home and put in the freezer?
I think just being raised, that's what I was raised with. Like, that's what we did. We went to the store and grabbed our groceries. Yeah. And, you know,
I mean, venison carries no fat hardly at all. It's very lean. It's very healthy for you. And I don't know that there's a whole lot of diseases you can get from that stuff. I mean, I haven't ever researched it really, but
it's pretty rare to have any problems with meat. As long as you, when you're checking it, what's the big one they have you check for? Bovine TB. And that should be fairly obvious when you're processing the deer.
Right.
But aside from that, yeah, you don't hear about too much. Obviously, if you've seen a game animal that was acting odd,
yep.
You know, you wouldn't harvest it, or if you did harvest it, you might choose to not eat it. But yeah, I mean, venison is some of the most healthy meat out there. Something else that's I've noticed is I've actually been watching, excuse me, a lot of America's Top Chef, I think it's called, with Gordon Ramsay.
Yep.
And it seems like every season they have venison on there now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that they're getting farm-raised venison, yeah. But it's just the fact that you're seeing it used by, you know, people that are high up in the culinary world,
yep.
And putting it out there as challenges for other chefs to cook with it. And then how many of the different chefs you see on there, they're like, oh, yeah, we have venison back home all the time.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, you have the one or two contestants that are like, I'm vegan. I don't know what to do with it. Yeah, well, you're in for a struggle trying to figure it out if you've never cooked meat before. But it's just the fact that you see it there more. I mean, right alongside beef, pork, they see a lot of lamb on there, you know, chicken, fish. So I think it's kind of interesting to see venison in the spotlight a little bit more, even though, like I said, it is probably farm-raised venison.
Yeah. So now the big thing with, let's just keep it on venison track, filling the freezer with venison requires a lot of time. A lot of time gone, a lot of time hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably got worse after we got together. I mean, because I know what we've talked about, we were just talking about it earlier, I was a deer hunter the whole time, and then the coyotes started being hunted, and that kind of came, I don't know, probably hardcore into it about 2 years into our relationship, 2 to 3 years into our relationship, where I would be gone at night hunting these things. But, like, let's just keep it on track with deer. Now that you know what the possibility is of having our freezer stocked year round, and now I'm learning canning.
How do you compare the pros and cons of the time used versus filling the freezer?
Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
Well, I would say if it was just venison, just deer that we're going for, it's not that bad, because yes, you prep months in advance, you scout spots, and you know, you're out there in the woods walking around and you're putting your cameras up and all that stuff, but it definitely doesn't take away as much time as the coyote hunting does. So
recently, can't say that about either.
And I benefit, and we as a family benefit from the venison, because
you benefit from a coyote too, because when I kill one, I come home and I'm happy.
Okay.
Well, not only that, but the coyotes, you'll eat the deer.
And right, exactly. And that's one of
the coyotes, you wouldn't have the deer in your freezer.
All right. Okay. Okay. Got me on that one.
We got to have a little argument here.
Got me on that one. But yeah, I think, I mean, I see like how much work you put into getting venison for us, you know, harvesting a deer for us. So all of that makes sense to me. And I love that. Like,
but it took a while.
Definitely took a while, especially when the kids were younger. I hated you being away more than, like, now it doesn't bother me so much that they're older and more independent.
I'll call myself out for people. I'm 33 now. And those first, when my kids were growing up, I was way more selfish about it.
Yeah.
I wanted to be in the woods. I wanted to be hunting. I wanted to be doing anything but sitting at my house.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but now, I mean, deer is obviously a little easier because it's a 3-month season, and then you're back to having your summer and crap that nobody likes. But I hate summer, dude. She loves it. I hate it. I cannot stand the summer. Yeah, I guess Kevin asked it pretty much exactly how it should have been asked. The pros and cons versus, you know, having a full freezer and me being gone all the time. Or we're a single income family right now. Yeah. So buying that meat at the store, that's going to get expensive for a lot of people. It is expensive right now. So is it worth it, the time I spend gone for the deer? Does it take a certain point, like, okay, he's gotten three now, it's worth the amount of time he's been gone, but if I get one every year, it kind of evens itself out to where it's like, that wasn't worth it.
Right. No, I would say it's worth it for sure for deer season. Absolutely.
What about fish now? Because fish was one thing you absolutely would not eat.
Right.
We have never been to Red Lobster or any seafood restaurant together.
Right.
Because you don't like seafood.
Yes.
But what was it with fish that you didn't like?
The flavor, the taste. I didn't like how they smelled. I did not like how they tasted. I did not like their texture.
Was that mind over matter too?
Yes. Absolutely mind over matter. I mean, because I eat fish now.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, would I like choose to eat fish? Like, am I like, can we have fish tonight? No. But if you're saying I'm making fish, then I'll eat the fish as long as it's cooked a certain way. I mean,
like lobster, Alicia?
No, I don't like anything from the water.
Okay.
Anything that, even shrimp, we had shrimp not too long ago and she didn't like that, even dipped in butter. And
it was the texture. It was like biting it, putting it, the texture of it in my mouth, just and the taste. I didn't like the taste either.
The reason I ask is because I've actually been thinking about trying crawfish from Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
There's a couple of whole groups out there dedicated to trapping crawfish and then cooking them. And I've been thinking about trying that sometime.
We've had a couple of them before that we've pulled out of the lake. And the meat's kind of like a, I don't know, there's like a different texture to it or something. I didn't much care for it. But eventually I do want to get some stuff here for like a crayfish boil just to try it with corn and peppers and everything that people put in them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that she'd so much go for that though.
Yeah, probably not.
Since we're just talking about, you know, the cost of buying food in the store versus venison, I just did a quick search and take a guess at how much it is for a boneless venison loin. This is on a website called Tajanin.
Spell it.
D-A-R-T-A-G-N-A-N.
Okay. I'm a, for a pound?
It just says venison loin boneless. Let's see. It says fresh 4.5 to 4.7 pounds average.
I'm going to guess around $50.
This is authentic Cervana certified venison. Every farm practices sustainable farming methods and humane treatment of animals. Grass fed, fresh pasture raised, $179.
For 4 to 6 pound?
4 to 5 pound. It's 4.5 to 4.75 pounds.
How much was that?
$179.99.
Yeah. And a deer tag costs $20.
Right.
But then you got to add in the cost of gas and the cost of, I mean, because even if it's not a financial cost, being away all the time is a price to pay.
Right.
Either way, on one end or the other. But yeah, $180 for 5 pound
venison loin.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of full deer in the state of Michigan with a resident tag.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, last year, for instance, was a struggle. I hunted, I think I remember 26 times I was in a tree stand in October alone.
Yes.
And then I didn't even kill a deer until like the second week of gun season.
How many did you miss?
I missed two. I missed two, hit a doe and lost her with the bow. Yeah, it was a tough year last year. But like last year, was it worth it? Or was that, there's got to be a certain point where you think this has to stop or he has to get one.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, like, for sure, if you don't bring one home, like, opening weekend or, you know, within, hey.
I get a two-day window here, folks. Hey. Everybody here, 2 days for it to not be worth it. No,
I need to see that you know what you're doing to fill the freezer. And then if you do get one, then it's not, you know, it's like, okay, go get another one. Yep, all right. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, if you're only bringing home one deer, but you're spending all that time out there scouting and all that stuff, then, yeah, I would be like, maybe it might be worth spending $180 on a loin. No, just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Goodness gracious. No.
The point is, Alicia, if he's not getting a deer, he's not filling the freezer, so you got to fill the freezer with something else.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and that's what I'm wondering. At what point do you say this isn't working? Yeah. Like, you got to, you either better put up or shut up. Shit or get off the pot, they say.
Mm-hmm. And it depends on how full your freezer is and
when
the season ends.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like last year, we talked at the end of, or at the beginning of season, we're like, how many do we need this year? And I think we had settled on 7.
Yeah.
And we did not get that with last year. I mean, we had a few that were given to us. People had shot and tagged, and we went and butchered them for ourselves. But we've already ran through the, I think, 5 that we got last year.
We're pretty close to, I'm ready for season. Let's just say that.
She's ready for
I'm
season.
I'm ready for season.
Mark that down in your calendars too. She said on the 5th of September, she's ready for me to be deer hunting again.
Another big difference from then to now is our kids go with you now. Yeah. Like, our boys are hunting with you. So you're taking some of what my normal responsibility would be with you. So,
and you've been out a couple times with him too, right, Alicia?
Yeah. Yes, I've gone a couple times. Definitely it wasn't a successful harvest at the times that I went. But
the coyote you have now.
Yeah, the coyote now. But
we will all be in the blind on Saturday morning for the youth hunt with the boys. All 5 of us, 3 kids, 2 adults, some Barbies. it's going to be interesting. But Owen is the most psyched for the youth hunt, I think, which is good because kind of spent probably 2 years more so forcing him to go, and you've seen this more because Owen and her have a relationship where he talks to her about stuff that he keeps secret from me. So she has told me before that, you know, I was pretty much pushing it too hard. I was making it not, he didn't enjoy it because he felt like he had to be out there just to keep me happy,
right?
And I tried even last year, I just bought the tags, said, you know, when you're ready to go, let me know. And I think the only time he went was during the youth hunt and one time during gun season. But that has got me so jacked this year because he went out and shot the gun a couple weekends ago, got comfortable with that. And then, I mean, he's counting down the days until he can be in the blind this year.
Right.
And that to me is, I'm excited. But yeah, I've got to... I mean, when I was gone at first, when we first got together, obviously we didn't have kids for 4 years. And then we had Carter. Carter is now our almost 12-year-old. And I mean, I remember taking him fishing quite a bit when he was little, but hunting.
Yeah, you can, it's not something you really can do. But I mean, he grew up seeing you bring deer home or fish home or, you know, coyotes home. So it's all something that's like in his blood, you know what I mean? Like, it's there and he knows about it and he's psyched about it.
Yeah, he's ready for season 2. He definitely is. But I mean, that does have to make it pretty tough on you to always be home with the kids. And I've always appreciated the time to get away because she knows I get 2-3 weeks of work and no time off to go do anything else. Well, that's when I start getting hangry, wanting to go hunting. And usually, go ahead.
Here's a question though. What if it was the roles were reversed?
I couldn't do it.
What if Alicia started hanging around with some friends, girlfriends that like to hunt, and they said, hey, let's go have a girls' weekend or girls' week and go deer hunting, and you stayed home with the kids?
No, I couldn't. I already couldn't do it because I've admitted to her before I will go insane sitting in the house with the kids. Mm-hmm. I can't. I am not, and I've heard that it's an excuse that you're not wired to do that, but it just, I can't, I go crazy because there's so many things that I want to be doing that I can't do sometimes. And not to sound like an ass or anything, but I feel like there's a lot less things that you have that you could be doing or that you would rather be doing. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's 100% true. I don't have the ambition or whatever it is to go do all that stuff that you do. And so, you know, I allow you to go do the things you enjoy. And when then when in reverse, if there's something that I need to do, or if there's something where I need you home for something, then since I let you go do your thing, then when I need you, you stay home, or you do what I need you to do, or you let me go do what I want to do.
Yeah, it's good to have that balance. I mean, that's always been really important. And you know, at my house, my kids are all older and moved out now, but it was the same way. You know, I had two kids. I had a boy and a girl, and they grew up, because I was hunting long before they came around, so they grew up seeing me going out hunting. There was times like working second shift where I didn't do as much hunting and stuff like that, but I was working second shift, so they didn't see me as much anyway. Once they got old enough, you know, I think Kyle went out hunting with me maybe twice, and then Catherine went out with me maybe once or twice. But neither one of them really had much interest to continue doing it. I know Catherine will still go out every now and then, but Kyle, with his family and everything being down in Texas, I don't think he has at all. But having that balance, I think, I mean, obviously she's not out here with me, but I think Anne had a real similar perspective on it. It's like what you're talking about, Alicia. You know, she was always like, you know, hey, we need to fill the freezer, or she'd like, you know, you're acting kind of like a dink. Why don't you go hunting?
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's really what it was. And
yeah,
you know, and to what Josh is saying, I know there's times where I start getting irritated, agitated, whatever, and Anne will usually sense that, and she'll tell me, hey, why don't you go hunting?
Dude, it only takes 30 minutes underneath the stars in the darkness for me to just completely reset myself.
Or sitting in a tree stand, or just even sitting in camp sometimes.
Right.
You know, it helps center yourself.
Were you like me when your kids were growing up? I mean, did you have a very, very low tolerance level for being around screaming and fighting and toys being thrown and all that stuff? Or did you have a high tolerance for that? Or were you kind of like needed to be out too?
I had a pretty good tolerance with it because I was teaching kids martial arts back then. So I was used to the kids for the most part, and that, and then I didn't have a low tolerance for my kids doing BS. So I kept it in check when I was around as much as I could. You know, I mean, kids are kids.
Yep.
You gotta let them be kids. But at the same time, you know, I'm like, all right, that's enough of that. Go sit in a corner, go to your room, whatever. You know,
yeah, it's hard, but I mean, it is nice now that I could take them out. All the kids have been out with me deer hunting. Well, I don't even know if Liv's ever been out with me deer hunting.
Yeah, I think she has.
Coyote hunting, for sure she has.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But yeah, that's the plan this weekend, is get them all out together, and then we can share that whole thing together.
Right.
Usually it is dad shot a deer, he's gonna bring it home, and then the work starts.
Yeah.
You know, with Carter, his deer, him and I have tracked him down. We actually all went and found his second deer.
Yep.
Owen has never had the chance to, well, he's never had a good shot at any deer at all. And, I'm really excited to be out there with everybody, because then, like I said, it's the whole experience. And that was kind of something I thought was cool too. When we went out coyote hunting the last time, we killed two coyotes together. And you tell Kevin what you told me about watching our videos compared to actually being out there.
It just amazed me how like fast it happens in real life. Like in the videos, you're sitting, you're watching, you're waiting, when's the shot gonna happen? But when I'm there with him, he was like, oh, coyote, boom, like, what just happened? Like, it was so fast.
And that happened both times. And she said, even the second one that we watched come from across the field that's 500 yards long, she's like, even that one didn't take very long. No. Like, it's still over a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think it was part of being there that made the process just seem so much faster?
Probably, yeah.
You said that, you didn't have an adrenaline rush or anything.
No, but I think too, like, I didn't really see the coyote. You were just like, there's a coyote.
The first one.
Yeah.
The second one you watched come
right.
All the way
yes. In. Yes. Yeah. The first, yeah, because the first one I didn't. So, yeah, you're like, you know, coyote, boom. And I was like, what? I didn't know anything
and
happened.
And then she got to see me shooting. So she was all, you know, turned
know,
on.
So turned on.
Two shots, two dead coyotes, not a real common thing. But no, that was pretty interesting to me, because she's like, I watch your guys' videos. And it seems like it takes minutes for you guys to pull the trigger. And a bunch of times I've said, why don't they just shoot already? Why haven't they killed it yet? Yeah. And when she's out there on the set and a coyote's coming in, it's happening so much faster than what it seems like on video.
Right.
I still think you had to have had a little bit of an adrenaline rush going on.
Not for the first one, because I didn't even know that it was there. The second one, I would say, like, my heart was pounding for you. Like, I'm okay, is he going to get it? Like,
my heart pounds
for you. I can see it. You know, like, I mean, I know you're a good shot, but like, I was like, okay. Well, like,
funny thing is, I'm digging on him, but my record lately has been worse than his, so I shouldn't be saying a whole lot.
You've been shooting, though. I haven't.
Yeah,
but I had several misses here when you were up here with Tony that was bad. And then I had two more following that. So
yeah, we know at least one of those is a scope problem.
Right.
Just bad zero.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Alicia, if you had the opportunity, like let's say Amanda called you up and said, hey, you want to go to deer camp? Let's say, what about as a couple? Would you guys go, like you two and then Steve and Amanda, go to deer camp? Would you want to go out hunting or go hang out at camp?
Kinda. I mean, it's definitely something that like I'd be open to doing, you know, but I definitely want to practice, you know, shooting the weapon and, you know, like I feel confident in what I'm, you know.
See, the hardest thing with us going to any kind of camp or anything like that is I think her concern is always how comfortable will she be?
Yeah.
Because she gets cold very, very easily.
A lot of that depends on the accommodations.
Yeah. Right, exactly. I mean, like staying in a tent like I used to do during October with my uncles and stuff, there's no way she could do that. She would freeze to death.
Right.
I think running water is an important part for a lot of women.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of hunting camps don't necessarily have that.
Right.
I don't know. What do you think?
That's pretty cool.
Anne's the exact same way about that. I've taken her up to our deer camp before, and the accommodations to her are not acceptable for where she wants to hang out.
Yeah. I need a toilet. I'd like a shower, but I can go. I mean, I could go a couple days, but like, not comfortably, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so yeah, I would rather, I mean, doesn't have to be like a fancy hotel, but like you know,
growing up when I was younger and hunting, for a while there's a period where like my mom and, you know, the other guys' wives would all come up to camp and stay for a day or stay for a couple days,
mm-hmm.
and just they would just hang out while we went out hunting, and they would cook and stuff like that and hang out, but that didn't last real long.
Yeah,
you know, it lasted, like I said, maybe a couple seasons, and then after that it was back to, yeah, you go, we're gonna stay home.
Yeah,
where we have running water and a hot shower and a nice comfy bed and
right,
it doesn't smell all musty.
And I know I've heard people talk about it before too, and a lot of people like don't even invite their spouse to go because they don't want everything else to change, or you know, they don't want to not do something because their wife or husband's there. And I mean, I've never worried about that with her because she's always pretty much been fine with me doing whatever I want to do as long as it's within limits. Like, you know, when I would drink, when I'd be out places, she would never stop me, but she'd tell me, you know, you're getting close. Don't be having any more. She's not like a killjoy for these things, but yeah, I think a lot of it is worrying about, am I going to hear somebody whining that it's cold out? Am I going to hear somebody whining that the food's not good enough? Mm-hmm. I don't concern myself with that because she's never been that way. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I invited you a couple times to go up places to deer hunt for a weekend. You're like, mm-hmm. No, just go do it.
Yeah, that's more your thing. Like, do I go with you sometimes, or would I go with you? Absolutely. But is it like my first thing to want to do? No, that's your thing. You go do your thing.
Right.
I know. I'll go do my
own thing, though.
I know, but that's not really, I mean, maybe it'll take another 15 years before you break me into that, but like, yeah,
pushing 60,
but no, I mean, maybe if there was like a nicer deer camp that you go to with a shower and a stove and a, you know, nice bed to sleep in, sure, that, you know,
I think that's
doable, but
I think that makes a big difference too. I mean, like if you had a cabin, like up at Don,
absolutely.
I was going to just say that.
You know, she'd probably be all about getting up there especially if you had Wi-Fi.
Wood stove heat. Well, Wi-Fi. Well, I guess, yeah, that's up to you if you'd want that. But
well, not only that, but if you had the kids up there, you'd definitely. Yeah.
Well, if I'm not hunting, I mean, if you're like, I'm just going with you and you're hunting and I'm staying back, like, yeah, that
see, would but in that situation, I don't want that.
Right.
If that's what deer camp's going to be about when you're just coming up here to do the same crap you're doing at home,
right,
then just stay home.
Right.
Right. And that's like up at our deer camp. They have a TV that they, a small TV that they have wired to a 12 volt battery that they'll use to watch games or news every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, even in that area, a lot of times it's a dead zone for phones.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're up there, there isn't anything.
Yep.
I mean, you might be able to get a little bit of service. I can get about enough service. I can send Ann a couple messages and say, hey, got a deer, or hey, I'm not seeing squat. You know, I'll be home at such and such a time. But up there, I mean, we have an outhouse. Mm-hmm. We don't have running water. Everything we bring in is in like storage containers for water, or we pull it from the creek. That's how we do our dishes. That's how we do our cooking. All the lights and appliances are run off propane.
No water heater.
No, there's no water heater.
No shower, really, unless you want
no shower. Okay. Nope.
See, to me, that doesn't sound like a good time. Like,
right. And that's kind of my point, is we don't have those anemones. But for us, it's perfectly comfortable. We actually kind of enjoy it. Like Josh was saying, you don't have those distractions like you do at work or at home. It's just a different environment that allows you to gel out, basically, and get more basic. And just being a basic guy and just hanging out, you know, not having all those distractions it's like I said before, it's centering.
That's when I have my best adventures or my best walking times, because I'm not on my phone looking at a map. Even I've got my eyes to the woods and I'm just wandering. I absolutely love those times. And that to you probably don't sound great.
Yeah, I agree completely. And it's, to me, it's any type of hunting or fishing. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's been more hunting than fishing lately. But I mean, just like going out coyote hunting, and even the nights where I don't have any activity with predators, you know, you get a nice clear sky out and it's nice and cool and you're out there by yourself. I mean, it's just so nice and relaxing and quiet. And Anne definitely notices a difference. That's why she sends me out to go hunting sometimes. She's like, yeah, you need to go out, then you'll come back and you'll be nice again.
Yeah.
Really?
No, that's absolutely true, because there's been times where we've almost been like, you know, at each other's throats, and I'm like, I'll be back in 5 hours.
Yeah,
I'm going hunting, and as soon as I get back, I'm pretty much that's
what I have recharged. Yeah.
You know, reset. And usually there's a whole lot of crap that adds up to that point, not typically household stuff, but it's just like
outside stuff.
Yeah, haven't been out in a month. I need to get in the woods somewhere.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, for like right now, that's just going for a walk, checking a trail camera, going scouting a new area. But I am not gone now as much as I was for a long time.
Right.
There was a lot of times, like coyote hunting specific, there was a couple years there where I would go every weekend from sundown till sun up, sleep half that day.
Yeah, you'd sleep the day away.
And then like wake up and go do it again.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, that's that kind of selfish part I went back to earlier, is I cared more about the hunting for a long time. And now it's just kind of to the point where it's still important to me. It's part of my life, but it's not priority.
Right.
There's a part that's still priority because I'll go crazy without it, but it's not the highest on my list.
Right. There's definitely been a maturity that you've gained over the years when it comes to priorities, for sure.
Yeah. But everybody's got to come into that themselves.
Yeah. Well,
of the times that you have went out hunting with Josh, what do you like about it?
Just spending time with him, just him and I. That's
the whole nature thing doesn't really do anything for you. It's more just doing something with him.
I think more for me, like I can go out there and I can look at the sky and just be in awe of like the sunset or the stars and or I absolutely love wind. Like, I don't know, like the air, the breeze, like I love the smell of that. So yeah, just, I think the combination of, I do enjoy the nature. I don't enjoy being in the dark with weird sounds going on around me, like not knowing where like coyotes are,
like turkeys coming out,
turkeys scaring the crap out of us. Yeah. Like that isn't so fun, but yeah, I mean, just spending time with him out there, and yes, some of the, you know, elements that are out there are, you know, make it.
And from what I gather from what Josh has said, and you as well, you don't like the cold, so you probably don't like being out there in the fall and winter.
No, I really don't. I mean, I don't mind fall, you know, just because it's beautiful out there too, but like, yeah, winter for sure. Like I get so cold so fast that I become not enjoyable to be around because I'm cold. Indeed. Like, you know, yeah, I just, my toes and my fingers freeze first, and then, you know, just, yeah, it's not fun for me. So
she has said before though that if she did deer hunt, she thinks she would want to do it with a gun.
Right. I feel like I would be most confident with a gun.
See, that's why sometimes I think you're smarter than he is, Alicia.
Yeah.
Because I
like
the bow
challenge. Yeah.
I love the bow hunt. I don't know what it is about it. I just love those deer inside 20 yards and knowing that you did everything and put a pointy stick where it needed to go.
Right.
I don't know. I think you'd do fine behind the crossbow too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Once she says that she wants to do it, that's all it's going to take. We will figure it out.
Right.
She's to the point now where she knows guns. She knows gun safety.
Right.
She knows how to shoot. It just is going to add a whole different aspect as soon as she knows that it's a live animal she would sometimes see on the side of the road and go, look at how cute that is.
Right. And I don't think that more now. Like, I think because I've seen you bring them home and, you know, cut them up and, you know, I've cut them up with you and we process them together. I don't so much think that that would bother me. Like, oh, there's a cute little deer out there. I don't want to shoot it like that.
Yeah. You've seen the whole process.
Yeah. Right? I've seen the whole process. Yeah. So like, I don't think that now, maybe like in the beginning, that could have been like an issue for me just because like my dad would take it to a processing place. So I never saw any of that like take place. So, I mean, I remember my sister going with him one time hunting, but I don't think they got anything. So like, but even if they would have, he would have just taken it and got it processed.
Yeah.
So Saturday, when you guys are all in the blind, how many of you are going to have tags?
Two.
Yeah, the boys.
Just so you know, Alicia, I'm assuming you don't have a tag, right?
No.
So I'm expecting some good videography from you.
Oh, yeah.
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 No, it's going to be fun because I told them all already we're probably going to have to get up. The spot we're going is about a 35-minute drive from home, so we're going to have to get up by about 5 a.m. Everybody get some food and take off because I think it gets light. I'd have to check the book for legal time next week, but I think it's light before 7.
I was going to say it's got to be right around 7 because I went out to that spot Saturday morning because she said she was seeing them at 8 o'clock and then fairly regularly. So I got out there at 7 and it was – to be honest with you, I had my thermal with me and I was still looking because I was in the woods.
Yep.
And it wasn't light enough yet for me to see something clearly. So I had the thermal with me scanning the brush quite a bit for probably 15, 20 minutes to half an hour.
Yep.
So yeah, I'd say somewhere around 7, maybe 7:30, good light.
So what do you look forward to the most when it is hunting season? And what do you least look forward to?
I think I most look forward to having a full freezer.
I was gonna say loins, burger.
Yeah. Least look forward to you being gone. I mean, I still don't enjoy you being gone all the time, but at least I know that there hopefully will be something coming home with you. So
so most of the negatives are all about time gone.
Yes.
Time spent away.
Right.
And we've had that conversation before because I could tell you guys now it is way easier for me to go hunting than it used to be. Even though I used to hunt more, it's way easier for me to go now than it ever used to be. I was just a selfish asshole in most respects of the word.
Right.
There was a lot of times where we argued that I was going to go out and I just said, if you're here when I get home, you're still here.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's how it was for a long time. Mm-hmm. Kevin, you were just about to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, talking about time away, I've been out west 4 times now
mm-hmm.
to go big game hunting for elk, antelope, mule deer, etc. And that's one thing I will say, and Ann has been really good about that. But when I come home empty-handed, she's not as good about it.
Right.
You know, and that happened the first 3 times I went out west.
Yeah.
You know, I think 2009, I brought home a mule deer. Of course, by the time we split that up amongst 3 people, I mean, each family didn't get a whole lot.
Yeah.
But then that last time out there with Joe, I mean, we got antelope and mule deer,
mm-hmm.
which Ann didn't really care for either one, so I ate most of it. But, you know, at least I came home with meat in that I could put in the freezer.
Yeah.
Same thing with going up to the UP, getting bear. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been successful past 3 times on that. And like when we go up for bear, we've been gone for at least about a solid week. And when we went out west, we were gone probably almost 2 weeks, probably like a week and a half, 2 weeks. So now, you know, like going up for a week for bear, and she knows that chances are pretty good I'm going to be successful, and she loves bear meat.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably a little bit easier for her to handle.
Yeah.
Whereas you come home and you spend all that time away and you don't come back with anything except something you picked up from the souvenir store. Right. Not quite as enthused about that.
Nope. I would agree with that. I think coming home with something makes a big difference. And also, like, you know, if he's just going for the night, or, you know, just going for the evening or whatever, I think that too. I mean, it's like, okay, I know he's coming home in, you know, so many hours. Whereas if he's going to deer camp, it's like, okay, he's gone for a week. I have to take care of everything, yep. You know, and I'm not super independent. I don't know how Ann is with all that, but like, you know, I kind of depend on him to take care of some of the household stuff.
Cooking, cleaning.
Yeah. Yeah. My slave.
Gas in the vehicle, mowing the lawns, making them food.
Since the kids have been out of the house, it's a lot different.
Yeah.
But now with her health issues, with like the rheumatoid arthritis,
right,
the opposite. Now I do a whole lot more of that stuff, and it's yep. harder. I mean, last time we went up, I had to have people come over and help her.
Right.
To be able to make that trip. And if I wouldn't have had anyone come over, I probably wouldn't have been able to make that trip.
Right. Yep.
Well, hopefully they can get her health situation straightened around so that would alleviate that.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like Randy Booty's on his way up to bear camp.
Yeah, he said he was going to go up about the second week. So it looked like he was all packed today. So I would assume he'll probably be leaving probably first of the week or something.
You didn't make it out for that hunt, huh?
No, we didn't draw tags this year. We figure about every third year we'll draw a tag. So next year we should draw a tag.
Okay. Well, maybe I need to start putting in for him, but, you know, that's talking her into another week away
yeah.
for a bear. And on the cooking aspect of bear, you have to watch out how you cook it, right?
You have to cook it to, I think it's a minimum of, what, 160 degrees internal temperature. So it has to be cooked to medium, basically. But, yeah, I mean, it's a different type of meat. You know, you've tried it.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a good-sized bear, you get a pretty good amount of meat off it, that's for sure. And
it was good, too.
Ann likes it better than venison. She told me after she tried that first one that I made a roast out of, she says, you can go just shoot bear and just not even worry about deer. I'm like, well, if I could go bear hunting every single year and have success on it, I would. But
right.
Would you survive off one bear a year? Or would you need more?
For just her and I, one would be fine.
Really?
Yeah.
How much meat do you consume in your house?
Pretty much other than breakfast, almost every meal.
Wild game?
No, not wild game. I'd say when we have a freezer full of wild game, maybe once or twice a week, probably, give or take, depending on what it is. I also tend to be kind of stingy with it. If I'm going to cook it, I want to make sure I cook it right.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes time. And as you know, I don't have a lot of time available most often.
Mm-hmm.
And I also kind of put it in the back. I'm like, well, let's eat this stuff because I want to save the bear meat or the venison for something else. And then it ends up sitting in the freezer until I remember again, oh yeah, I was saving that for something.
Yep.
Burger gets used a lot though. I will say that when we have venison burger or bear burger in the house, especially come on fall and winter, that gets used a lot, you know, chili, all sorts of stuff like that. The steaks and stuff, they get used a little bit more sparingly.
So what would you think your favorite cut of venison is? What do you like the most that we do with venison?
Probably steaks.
And jerky.
And jerky.
She eats a lot of jerky.
Yeah. And I see, my least favorite is burger, for sure.
You were talking about maybe trying some sausage type stuff this year, weren't you?
Yep. I'm learning. I actually just ran the pressure canner for the first time today. And people might get grossed out by this, but I did heart and onions and liver and onions in the pressure canner. Read a whole bunch of stuff about how to make them. Our freezers, we have 1, 2, 3 chest freezers. One of them is full of furs. The other two are full of meat. And probably 80% of the meat we get off every deer is burger.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been wanting to try to learn different methods of putting stuff away because we buy hot dogs. Why should I buy hot dogs if there's got to be a way that I can make them out of venison and it's probably 10 times better than a hot dog?
Or brats.
Or bratwurst, yep.
I know a lot of guys really like bear brats. I haven't really heard of anyone that's tried venison brats, so that'd be interesting.
I want to try it, but I have to find all the right connectors, you know, the extensions and stuff for my grinder. Summer sausage I want to do, but I want to learn how to can it too, because not only will it clear up some freezer space, mm-hmm. but putting it in a can, they say, can last up to 10 years if it's done properly. And on nights like when I'm doing 10-hour days, 11-hour days, if she's got to make dinner, she can go open up a can of meat, throw it in a pan, quick fry it up and add it to something, mm-hmm. and it's already edible right out of the jar.
So, you know, the first time I heard someone talking about canned venison, I thought it sounded absolutely disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Guy at work brought in a jar that he did, and he says, here, take this home, take it out, cook up some noodles, add some beef gravy, and throw this in with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried it, and oh my gosh, it was so good that I want to can it as well. It's just a question of getting the time to do it. But mm-hmm. Going back to you talking about the heart.
Yep.
If you get a chance, try pickling it. I've heard that is really good.
I did read about that earlier, but I had so many onions already cut up and everything. I just did
it. When you put onions in it, when you pickle it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But I'm going to try different ways because, yeah, we look in our freezer and 6 out of 7 days a week, she'll text me or ask me, you know, what do we want for dinner? Well, what do we have?
What can I do with burger?
Yeah, exactly. It's always burger. So yeah. we're just trying to learn different methods and put as much of it away. My ultimate goal in the long run is to eliminate grocery store trips as much as I possibly can.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we just went through our garden today. That's another thing, you know, that you do you think you would have had a garden if it wasn't for being married to a guy that wants to cook and does everything with wild game and needs vegetables and stuff?
No, I don't, because that's not something I grew up with either. Like nobody in my family had a garden that we would go pick. I think it's all about how you're raised, like, you know, what stuff you see or stuff you learn. I mean, being with you and, you know, seeing your family, your mom had a garden, you mm-hmm. know, so like going out and picking that and, you know, getting stuff from that and using that, like, it's kind of nice. If you need a tomato, you just go out to the garden, grab a tomato. Like, yeah. You don't have to go to the grocery store for that. So,
and we know how everything out there was grown.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it definitely makes a big difference.
And not only that, but something you guys do together, which is
right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Every day. Let's go check the garden and pick it and weed it, whatever.
Yep.
Today we just picked, I don't know, not as many potatoes as I thought we would have gotten, but there's a little discrepancy on when we should have dug them up and when we shouldn't have, but the leaves were starting to die. I thought that was the proper time to do it. And we maybe got 2 meals worth for our family of potatoes that we grew out of. How many potatoes did he plant? 8? Something like that.
Maybe. Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just all right now. It's all about being able to survive whatever is happening or going to happen or could happen. Having food in the freezer, having food in the jars, and just knowing that we don't necessarily need to go to the grocery store will take, I mean, that's a huge weight for a single income family of 5.
Right.
Right.
I mean, especially now, she can't even go to Aldi, which is like discount food for less than to $250.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just gotten to that point where that's my ultimate goal. If we can skip going to the grocery store because I've got chickens, or, you know, she eventually wants to have chickens, so we have eggs and then we have chicken itself. I mean, yeah, sounds like we're in for a lot of learning in the next couple of years, because that's my ultimate goal. I don't know about hers.
Yeah.
That was actually a fond memory of mine as a kid around this time of year, is coming into the house and my parents would be canning or freezing vegetables or whatever. We always had a really big garden growing up.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I always remember walking in smelling like, you know, canned tomatoes, canned green beans, all that stuff, and the smell of the house. It was a fond memory growing up.
Yeah.
You know, for a few years we had a garden here. I still have an herb garden, but the chicken coop took over and the chickens took over my other garden. So yeah. I haven't produced really much of anything out of there, but it's something that was definitely a fond memory, and I wouldn't mind doing it again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, and I don't have those memories because we never had anything like that. You probably have memories of your mom canning.
Mom always had a garden.
But, you know, so for our kids, like, they will have those memories because you're doing it, or we're doing it together, you know, and they see that. So maybe that can be something for them, you know.
I was involved in 4-H for quite a few years. And that's one thing we actually did in 4-H was gardening, how to lay out a garden, how to plant it and plant it and everything else.
Yep.
Do you guys have a 4-H group around there? Have you ever thought about getting the kids in that?
My sister used to be
probably
in 4-H.
Do, but no.
Oh.
I thought 4-H was all horses.
Stuff. It depends on the 4-H group. Because, I mean, in ours, we did gardening. We did leather work. We did woodwork. We had a unit where they taught us how to shoot, trap, and skeet.
Oh, wow.
We did, I was BB gun shooting competitions. All that was through 4-H. So it really just depends on what your chapter has.
Well, then I'm 4-H because my kids do most of that.
Yeah, but not.
Well, if you got involved in it, it'd be pretty easy to get in that, because our neighbor was actually the head of the local 4-H group. And he was about trying to do a lot of stuff. I mean, they did animals too. Like, he did rabbits. I don't know if they did any of the other livestock, like chickens or anything like that. I don't remember that, but I do remember we had one where we made our own fishing poles.
Yeah.
There's a place down here between Whitehall and Montague, and they sold all the stuff, blanks and everything else, to make your own fishing poles. So one of the classes we did was we all made our own fishing poles. I still have the fishing pole that I made when I was a kid in 4-H.
Nice.
Yeah.
So just,
kids
just
love depends, that.
Just depends on what, you know, is available at your local 4-H group, or getting involved in it and teaching it yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, that's pretty much an add-on to homeschooling at this point for us, because that's the stuff that we've tried to do our best to teach them, you know, gardening and all that. Like she said, when we get a deer, it's like a family process.
Yep.
You know, we're the boys and I go into the garage, get the skin off it, everything, get it quartered up. Then we bring it in. We all wash it together. Then we move it over the table, and we have almost like a processing line.
Right.
I sit at the cutting board, getting everything divided and cut up how we want it. Carter usually handles the grinder. Alicia's usually on the bagger, and we just continue passing meat around the table until it's all gone. And it's about a 4-hour process, but that's another, you know, that's part of it that I like, because everybody's involved at that point, and everybody at the same time is watching how this deer is being butchered, put together, and frozen for the rest of the year. Right. So even the kids will be like, you know, what's for dinner tonight? We're having stew with venison meat. They know exactly
Was it Carter's deer? Was it Dad's deer?
Yeah.
And they know right when that meat was cut up and divided and put in bags and all that stuff. So I think that's all part of it. And, you know, it's worked good to come. I mean, you were always a country girl.
Well, kind of. Dad was city, mom was country. So
I wasn't really a country boy, a city boy, but I've always loved hunting. And I mean, there's a lot of possibilities that we could have butted heads a lot more than we ever have when I was learning to do all this. But to finish up, kind of, Kevin, you got anything else for any other questions?
No, it's just, you know, it's it's good to see that one that you go out with him or have gone out with him. It's great to see you guys do it as a family. You know, the nice thing is too, you see the advantages of it, you know, having your own food, you're self-sustainable, you know where the food comes from. And to me, that's an important aspect of it. And like the, you know, some of the grief that we catch on the page, people just don't get that aspect of it. So it's nice to hear another side of that. And, you know, hopefully some people that maybe didn't understand it before might get a better grasp of it now by hearing another side of it.
Yeah. I mean, Alicia is by no sense of the word an anti-hunter, but she's also, I don't think you'd call yourself a hunter.
No.
You've never killed an animal.
Right.
You've never taken an animal apart by yourself and, and put it on the table. So I think, yeah, that it is good to have that, that other side for people to hear that maybe, maybe you got to open up your blinders just a little bit to see the rest of the story, you know, but,
you know, when we were, it was always kind of a standing joke. As a matter of fact, you know, the deer hunter's widow,
the
common term used. And we actually had, there was a local church up that wasn't far from our deer hunting property that would have, a deer hunter's ball. And then they would have one night where they'd have a dinner for all the deer hunters come to church, had a nice dinner and all that. The next night they would have the deer hunter's widow's ball and they would have all the women come over and hang out and have a meal and everything else. It was always kind of cool.
So I don't know that it's necessarily, you think hunting is still at that point where everybody's just completely forgotten about everything else in their life besides hunting? I mean, I feel like hunting in a lot of families is no longer quite that important.
See, I think it depends on your demographic, where you're at.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people that live in a more rural community or, you know, further away, the further away from civilization you get, the more important that is.
Yeah. Right.
Put it that way. Yeah. Inner city people, it's just a temporary release form if they even do it.
Yeah.
People in the suburbs, maybe 50-50, but people that live out, I mean, I bet you, I would be surprised if you could find many people in the Upper Peninsula, aside from the big cities, that aren't that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Or people that have, you know, that can't afford to always go to the store. You know, they know that that's their best means for having a good meal that they can afford.
Right.
Well, and let's be honest, that's part of why I do it. It is expensive to feed a family, more expensive now than it ever has been. And, you know, that is huge to be able to even, you know, putting fish in there, putting deer in there. Then if the boys want to go out squirrel hunting, she said before she would never eat squirrel. And I'm pretty sure she ate the last squirrel we ate.
I tried it, but that's definitely another mind over matter thing. Yeah.
Just knowing that you can take care of everybody without needing, if anything happens, without needing anybody else.
That is
my ultimate goal.
You know, and there's a lot of good resources on that too. And, you know, testimonials from other people like the Meat Eater TV show and podcast. Joe Rogan never used to be a hunter until he hooked up with Steve Ranella. If you listen to him talk about hunting now, I mean, it's a lot of what we're talking about right now.
Well, and he says the same thing in his podcast, Joe Rogan. He says, you know, a lot of people think that it's okay for them to go to the store and buy the cow that's been killed in a worse way than what it was when I went out there and shot it with a rifle behind the shoulder and it fell over immediately dead. He said, but they also will say you shouldn't be out there hunting these deer because they're so beautiful. But if they see somebody shoot a squirrel, it's like not even a concern because they don't associate so much of like the, you know, like Disney qualities to a squirrel as they do to a deer.
I know you haven't watched Yellowstone, have you?
Nope. No.
John Dutton had a really good quote on Yellowstone. He was actually in a conversation with an environmentalist, and he basically at the end of it, he said, how cute does an animal have to be before you care whether it lives or dies to provide food for you?
Exactly. Right. Where do you draw the line? Like that
That billboard
I've seen, where do you draw the line at food versus pets? Like, that's just a heartstring, you know, reaction kind of to looking at animals. But it's good to see, it's good to have people knowing the full potential of this And like her before me, I don't think really realized that,
right,
or would have realized that, because I've used so many things that we've taken home.
Yeah.
And that goes back to the whole 4-H thing, because really, if you look at 4-H, it parallels hunting in a certain sense, because the ones that do farm animals, the kids that raise those animals know that if it's a cow, a pig, a sheep, it could very well be being sold to provide food for somebody or for themselves. I mean,
right.
And then hunting is the same way, but there's a farm that I coyote hunt, and they actually brought something new experience for me. Got talking about eating goat. I've never eaten goat before, and I got talking to the landowner about it, and they're with 4-H, and they raise all these animals for 4-H and for themselves. And she says, "Oh, we love goat burger, you know, it's great." And I kind of looked at her funny. I'm like, "Does it taste like they smell? Because if that's the case, it doesn't sound all that appealing." She says, "No, you know," and she gave me, I think, a 2-pound package of it that they had raised, they had slaughtered, mm-hmm. packaged up and everything. And I tell you what, that was delicious. I would eat that again in a heartbeat.
Any flavor that you can compare it to?
You know, it wasn't gamey like venison, but didn't taste quite like beef either. And it didn't taste like pork. It had its own unique flavor to it, yeah. really.
But not bad.
But it wasn't real strong. It wasn't gamey. It was a nice mild flavor. They mixed it with enough fat that it wasn't dry. Because that's one thing I asked her about. I said, "How do you prepare it?" You know, she goes, "Oh, it's burger, so we just prepare it like a regular hamburger."
Yeah,
that's what I did, and it was great. But that parallel too, you know, of the kids in that program or hunting for that matter, to see that other facet of, in my opinion, why God put a lot of these animals in front of us, mm-hmm. was for sustenance, for us to feed ourselves. That's part of the natural circle of life. Animals die. Animals get eaten. Yep. Same thing with plants. Animals eat the plants. We eat the animals.
Yep.
It's all natural, sustainable food for people. Or if you're a wild animal, I mean, they eat other wild animals. So, I mean, they're eating it too. It's just learning about that whole circle of life, so to speak, and having an appreciation of, you know, if you're hunting, you're putting in the time to hunt, to scout, to set up, to learn to take that animal effectively. If you're on a farmstead or a homestead, you're learning how to raise that animal, feed it, make sure it's as healthy as possible, and then knowing when the right time is to actually, you know, slaughter that animal and put it in the freezer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yep. I agree. Well, to finish this out, I have one final question. That is, do you have any advice for anybody either new into a relationship or planning a relationship or anything? Like, is there a way to, because I think what I did was pretty much, I didn't really change except for maybe ramp it up and start hunting even more for a long time. I was always a hunter, but do you think it would have bothered you more for me to all of a sudden one day be like, "Hey, I think I'm going to be gone all the time to go hunting," when I didn't do that prior at all? I mean, you've known me my whole, for a long time of me yeah. deer hunting.
Yeah.
So that was never a surprise. But I mean, is there anything to make that easier on you, the stay-at-home mom, the wife? What should we do? How does it?
How about this way? Advice for a woman in a relationship mm-hmm. that is with a husband that hunts. Or advice for the husband that's yeah. in that relationship.
Yeah. Well, I think a big part to remember is that people are always growing and changing. So like when I met Josh, he pretty much just deer hunted. And then a couple years into it, you know, that's when he started getting to coyote hunting and wanting to get good at it and wanting to learn every aspect of it. Definitely with young kids in the house definitely played a big part for me to, I mean, be frustrated with how much he wanted to be gone. Like, your kids are little, like, you should be helping me with this stuff with them, especially when they were sick or something. Like, it was like I needed help. And it was, that part probably was hard for me, but like, you have to remember that, like, this is what he loves to do. And you need to be able to evolve with that too. Like for me, like I know that's what he loves to do. I know that he, you know, it makes him happy to do this. And so I have to be able to go, okay, this makes him happy. He needs to be able to do this. This makes our relationship stronger because he's doing what he loves. And then if I need to do something, like I said, like it definitely took several years for him to realize priorities, but like now it's like, if I need you home or I need you.
And an even balance.
And yes, an even balance. Yes.
That's what struggled for me. So
yeah,
like, I want to be this every day doing this.
Right.
I don't want to take any time off to let you do something else.
Right.
I struggle with that.
Yeah. Yeah. You're better about it now, but for sure. Like when you were in the very beginning stages of it and like trying to learn. And I think like, I love now seeing how much energy and effort and everything you put into like scouting and setting up everything and making sure that things are like perfect for conditions and all the videos you watch and all the different aspects of learning every piece of it you can, which I think makes you a successful hunter. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I love that you are passing that down to our children. Like they see how hard you work to harvest a deer or to get a coyote or whatever animal it is to fish.
Do anything in yeah. that aspect, I guess.
Oh yeah. I mean the garden, you know, anything, like they see that. And I personally think that's great, but you have to remember people grow and change and you just need to be flexible. Like you really do. You have to be flexible and you have to be able to communicate. Like that's a big thing too.
Yeah.
So
and what part of communication you think in the hunting outdoor side, what do you think needs to be communicated most?
Well, I think a lot, like in the beginning for me, like I would just keep it in that I was frustrated that you were.
Oh yeah. Until I got home, then she wouldn't keep
it. Like, so you're like, I'm out. See ya. Yeah. And then the whole time you're gone, it's just bubbling. Like it's just, I'm frustrated. And then if something happens with a kid or whatever, like, or I'm at a family function alone and someone's like, where's Josh? Oh, he's hunting. Like it definitely hit a lot in the beginning, you know, but now I don't know. It's different now for me. I mean,
does that have to do because the kids are older?
I think part of it is the kids are older. Part of it is like, it's something I know you need. Like, and so for us to stay kind of, I don't know, in a happy marriage, like you need to be able to do you.
Well, we've talked about it before. There's a lot worse things that could be out.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, I'm glad it's hunting. I would rather be hunting over certain other things.
Yeah.
So,
we
yeah.
had that argument before. Cause I finally said, listen, I can go out all night and hunt and be happy and show pictures of the stars and dead coyotes, mm-hmm. or I could be in a bar. What do you want?
Yeah.
And I think eventually that did get to you, me saying that, because you stopped bothering me about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm seriously, Kevin. I mean, that's how it was. It was because it wasn't, like I said, it was not always easy for me to go. There was times where I said, seriously, if you want to be here when I get home, be here.
Yeah.
Otherwise, don't be, but I'm still going to go hunting.
I mean, Ann and I have, I've said probably similar things to Ann, not exactly like that, but
I'm a dick of it.
Or that, you know, I'm trying to remember exactly how I word it, but yeah, basically, you know, well, I could be out at a bar instead of out hunting, you know, mm-hmm. or I could be out doing she's all sorts hunting. Of other stuff other yeah. than hunting, you know, I mean, try and look at the positive side. At least right. I'm doing something that not only makes me happy, but I'm providing for my family when it's a game animal you can eat.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think my advice would be just to be able to understand that this is what your partner enjoys doing. This is what they kind of need to be themselves. And you just have to be able to evolve with that too, you know, and I mean, that's part of life. You grow, you change, you know, certain things are more important. Certain things become less important. Like it's just kind of all part of growing up, maturing and different, you know, learning different things about what you enjoy in your life. So,
and from the husband aspect, guys out there, that applies to your wife too. Whatever keeps her happy,
right?
And she likes to do and needs to do, you need to let her do it,
right?
I was thinking, what's the opposite phrase of happy wife, happy life? What is that for guys? What does the wife say about the guy? Happy husband.
Nothing. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, I mean, for happy me, it spouse, matters.
Happy house.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
That's the only thing.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah.
We've ran off that for a long time because I've heard that happy wife, happy life.
Yeah.
That to me is bull crap. Because if you're not both happy, what's the point of being
in being the marriage?
That,
yeah.
In that together.
I agree. And it requires understanding and, like you said, communication and everything on both sides and having a balance.
Yeah.
So when you want to go hunting and she lets you go hunting, but tomorrow she says she wants to go get her nails did, that's what you let her go do.
Right. Exactly.
Give and take.
Yeah. You have to have that give and take. I think that's kind of how we've lasted so long is because we do. I mean, it definitely took many years of figuring that out between the two of us, you know, but we
years.
Yeah, it did. It was years. I mean, it was like all of our children's younger years. I mean, because it was when they were little that you really started getting into some of that other hunting. So bow fishing and, you know,
I haven't done that in a while.
I know, but it was also all things that you tried and I was more than happy to let you try them, you know, but
bow fishing was
just a warning to you, Alicia. We're trying to get him into more stuff like turkey hunting, bear hunting.
And I keep saying, no, I want to spend time with my wife.
Yeah. Hey, that's fine. Like, I tried the bear that he got from you the one time and it was good. So, I mean, yeah, turkey, fill the freezer, bear, fill the freezer, whatever. But
stupid turkeys. Eat them stupid
things. You just have to come to it with one of us and I think you'll like it.
Yeah.
I know. All righty. Well, thank you so much, babe, for sitting down with us both and answering some of our long lost questions that never get asked because we're worried about the outcome.
Oh, Jesus.
Anything to finish up, Kevin?
Thank you, Alicia, for letting Josh play with me.
Oh.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for letting me play with Kevin. All right.
Glad you're a good influence, Kevin.
Well, from what he knows.
Yeah, from what I know. All I see.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, so much for listening. And if you have any input on this whole subject at all, please let us know what you think. You know, because this is one I've been thinking about this one for a while, trying to get the female aspect. Mm-hmm. Because usually it's all us guys talking about our wives and how they're nagging us and bothering us about going hunting and stuff. But I wanted to see... And we've never really actually sat down and talked real in depth about it because I've always just said, if you're happy, good. If you're not, you'll get over it. But this is probably, I've known a lot of this stuff for a while. I've realized it a while ago. But to hear it come from her, I hope can help some people who might be in a situation where they're like, I love to hunt, but my wife's going to leave me if I keep doing it. There's give and take on both sides. So, you know, honestly, if you have any thoughts on this, any opinion, let us know. We appreciate everybody taking the time to listen. Go ahead, Kevin.
And I'll just say one thing. This is a thanks to my wife for supporting me in hunting, allowing me to do that.
Yep.
But also a thanks to all the spouses out there that support each other in their activities. I mean, especially hunting, because that's what we're about. But any activities, you know, it's great to have that support from your spouse. And knowing the different aspects of it, like you, Alicia, you know, I know there's spouses out there that don't get involved in, you know, like the processing of the game and all that. They just, okay, your husband comes home, process it, I'll cook it. Yep. You know, it's nice to see that support from you in terms of getting involved in the whole process.
Yep.
And just, it does mean a lot to us to have that support and not have it be a point of contention in a relationship.
Right.
Makes the whole experience that much better.
Right, exactly.
Yep, absolutely. All righty. Well, thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to everybody next week on the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast.